Well, we may have others joining, but I'm going to go ahead and just do the quick intro. So, we've been on break for a while, and then we thought this class was going to start in October, but we're starting it now because we're hoping that Khyentse Rinpoche will be here in October. So we don't want too many things happening in October during his visit. So thank you, Hemant, for being so flexible in working around changing the dates. And thank you for everyone who was able to still come and join us, even with the change in the dates. So this module, which is module 12, Wisdom of Emptiness, will be five sessions now, and we're going to go for the full hour and a half because it was originally scheduled for six sessions, just so we can kind of squeeze it in, hopefully before Khyentse Rinpoche gets here, which we don't have any dates yet, by the way, but we are hoping that it will be in October. But so we're going to try to finish this up a little quicker, so we went ahead and extended it to an hour and a half. So we go from 7 to 8:30, and that will go until I think it was October 10th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, correct.
October 10th. So I don't think we have any. Well, maybe there are a couple new people. I'm going to just go through this very quickly. Hi, Mojo. Mojo is Michael's dog. He joins us
Hello.
occasionally. So I'm going to do a very quick screen share and just go through how to access the course materials real quick. So for those of you who already know how to do this, just bear with me for a moment. And where is it? Ah, here we go. I think it's this one. All right, so to access the course materials, you had registered for this class because you are either on YouTube or you are on Zoom. So you would go to kadampa-center.org, and in your email that you received, you should have received information on how to do this. So you just go to our main webpage and then add the slash user. And then this page pops up. So this is where you'll have to sign in with the username and password that you would have received. So just scroll down a little bit so that you can sign in here. And the username is db-participant. So you would type that in. And then the password you should have received in your email. So then you type that in. And then here's all the Discovering Buddhism material for all of the 12 modules so far. So you can just go back if you want to. But we're on Wisdom of Emptiness right now. There's an information page here. There's a place for homework, which there's nothing there yet. Hopefully, maybe tonight or tomorrow, there will be a homework page there that you can access as well. But for the information page, then you would just click on that. And here is everything that you need to know about this particular module, as far as accessing information. I'm not saying you will actually, have everything you need to know for understanding the wisdom of emptiness. That is not on this page. So anyway, there's the online readings, and you can just click on these links, the books, how to donate, because of course here at Kadampa Center, we don't charge a fee for anything, any of our Dharma classes. We don't want finances to be an obstacle to hearing and learning the Dharma. But we do need run solely pretty much by donations. And of course, that's a wonderful way to practice generosity. There's four different ways to give, all right here. And then if you are working towards obtaining a Discovering Buddhism certificate, there really are, we don't offer that through the Kadampa Center per se, but we do offer the classes that you need. If you are working towards obtaining an FPMT certificate, you can follow these directions, which are on page 2 of that information sheet. All right. So I'm going to stop that screen share. Does anyone have any questions about how to access course materials? Okay. And is everyone hearing me okay tonight? And is everyone seeing me okay? Because from my side, my video keeps like stopping. I don't know why. Okay. Well, good. Then I'm not going to worry about that. All right. So, Hemant, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to you. And then Hemant will give a quick introduction and then we'll start the introductory video.
Thank you, Linda. First of all, I don't know where everybody's from. So I'll start with good evening. And if somebody's somewhere far away, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whatever, wherever you are. A little bit about me. I'm a DB instructor for Kadampa Center, and FPMT has given me permission to teach this class. This is probably my fourth time I'm teaching emptiness. Every class I get better and better. It's like I would expect you to go through the same type of contemplation and practice and analysis. It doesn't happen so quickly, right? So, but just to start with, you know, before we start the video, so the today's class, some logistics, this video is about 26 minutes. So that cuts into our hour and a half. So for the following hour, we'll go through some introduction, background, and give you a little highlight about what this subject matter is. And we'll build upon that. Right. And then hopefully starting with even today, if you want to, but from class two, I'll try to get done a little quicker. So we have few minutes for question and answer. I also expect that there is some reading that we will go through in today's class that I would expect you to read. This is a dense subject. It's a very profound subject and it's advanced classes. So unless you put your diligence in it, and you really are determined and motivated to learn this subject, it doesn't happen quickly. It takes a little time, right? So hope you can pay attention. And it's an introductory course, and that will put you in the right path to learn emptiness. So let's take a look at the video first, and then we'll start. We'll do a little meditation, motivation, and we'll start the class, okay?
Okay.
Thank you for that.
So I will go ahead and share my screen to show the video. You know, of course, with technology, if there's any problems or you can't hear or whatever, it's actually best if you just unmute and tell me because otherwise, when it's on full screen, I can't see the chat. So just let me know somehow if there is an issue. Okay, so we'll see how this goes.
Most of the time, life appears to us to be completely solid and permanent. we believe this fixed view of our bodies and our thoughts and the projections of our lives and the world around us. I believe it's all true. According to Buddhism, this habit of misapprehending everything we experience is the root of all of our problems. In particular, when we think that I am real, solid, and unchanging, we put all of our energy into defending the happiness of this I at the cost of everything and everyone else. The Buddha realized this is the greatest ignorance we suffer from, and with his earth-shaking teachings on emptiness, he said, wait a minute, the world isn't as concrete as you think. Why don't you analyze what you call reality very, very carefully and check to see if it really exists the way you think. The truth is, nothing exists that it appears. And by realizing this, you'll create a happier situation for yourself and for others. This wisdom that realizes emptiness is extraordinary and has the power to free us at any moment.
The Buddha's wisdom teachings on emptiness are complex and difficult teachings, not easy to understand. It's particularly important that one prepares the mind before listening to these teachings with an appropriate motivation that opens the mind to being able to understand and absorb them. This is similar to tilling the soil of a garden in order to be able to plant the seeds of enlightenment. Therefore, now, in your mind, make a strong determination, generate a strong motivation to be able to traverse the spiritual path, to understand the Buddhist teachings on emptiness, in order to free yourself from the bonds of samsara, and to reach enlightenment in order to be able to also free all suffering living beings.
Samsara, which is apprehended by the ignorance, the king of the delusion, see, the ignorance, the man not knowing the ultimate nature of the phenomena, then, such as the mind not knowing ultimate nature of the I, which is the root of samsara. So essential point to essential very essential point to know what is the false or the truth in your life. So not realizing is first you have to recognize objective beauty, the false I, which is the you have to recognize the false I, which is false. Which is root the ignorance, not knowing what is I. Even though we think I in 24 hours, we talk always I, like chanting Om Mani Padme Hum. We think I 24 hours. We say we think I, but do not know what is I. We fight for the I. You know, we fight for this I. We kill other, even for this I, even we have to kill people, other people, other sentient beings. Create so many harms, killing, stealing, taking lives, so many harms to give, so many harms to others for this I, to protect this I, for the happiness of this I, to give happiness to this I. But we do not know, but no idea what is I. No knowledge what is I. This false I, is it? The inherently existing I. I that which appear to you, even though it's merely labeled, but appear you not merely labeled. So this is there, this appearance there, from the beginning of the birth up to now, but you never recognized that that is false.
I suppose the ultimate analysis to overcome attachment is to analyze the nature of I. And also, you know, when we analyze the nature of self or the persons we are attached to, like I mentioned before, we can't pinpoint the real person there that we are attached to. So we end up with a sense of emptiness, you know? And not the ordinary emptiness, like an empty room, but just the emptiness of not being able to find that object of attachment. That doesn't exist there in that person, the way we perceive it. So when you experience the emptiness again, mind becomes very happy and relaxed. And the same when we analyze ourselves, you know? If we are in a state of attachment and greed for something, then one can analyze, where is this greedy me? You know? Where does this greedy me exist? How does it exist? So then you try to look. Is it my body? Is it my mind? You know, you try to investigate, where is this greedy me? Is it oneness with my mind? Am I greed? Am I in the nature of greed? Can't be, isn't it? Because then you would have to be greedy all the time. So I'm not my greed. My greed is just a moment, state of my mind. Okay, so who is greedy? You know, when you research inside, you can't pinpoint this independent self that is sitting there somewhere being greedy. It's completely not there. Again, emptiness, you know, space, makes you feel happy. Suddenly, greed is gone because there's nobody there being greedy. And you know, the emptiness is the ultimate method to eliminate negative states of mind because they are based on a false view, you know. When you research the correct view of the self, negativity goes, definitely goes. It has no foundation. It drops down, then wisdom comes. You know, with wisdom, this negative state of mind doesn't have a chance. And with wisdom, you feel satisfied. It satisfies you, makes you content. You feel good inside, you know? That's the ultimate solution to attachment and to, negative states of mind. And this all have to be learned in meditation. So it's all part of meditation practice. But don't think that there are no methods to overcome negativities. In Buddhism, plenty of methods. It's just a matter of we need to practice it, you know.
Mahayana Buddhism in general, you have the conventional mode of how things exist, which is the Davidness of David and the carpetness of carpet and the cupness of cups and like that. They're all got their own distinct conventional mode of existing, and they're all kind of in that, within that context, exist, conventionally speaking. Then you have the ultimate or final mode of existence of things, okay? And that's, if you like, the same for everything. So ultimately, Buddha would say, you cannot find inherent self-existent glasses-ness. Glasses are empty of being inherent, findable, real, in and of themselves, glasses-ness, which is how we grasp at everything, Buddha would say, due to this fundamental ignorance in our mind. It is empty of that. And empty in this sense simply means lacking. Lacking that type of existence. But the ignorance within our mind, Buddha is saying, which is completely pervasive, absolutely clings to that, believes it, sees it 1,000,000,000% unceasingly. And it's a total, big, fat, rotten lie. And it's the mother of all lies. The cause of all suffering. The cause of universes, finally. The cause of everything. Okay, Buddha says, it is empty of all of this. Ultimately, you cannot find glasses. Ultimately, there is no glasses from its own side. There's no David from its own side. There's no carpet from its own side. There's no kaka from its own side. The emptiness of everything, the emptiness of kaka and the emptiness of you is the same. All are empty or lack an ultimate reality, a findable inherentness. Conventionally, nevertheless, we indeed can point to glasses, not a problem. There are glasses there, and we'd be very stupid to call it a cup. You'd be in trouble. Coffee would burn you. So the thing is, right now, there's this huge contradiction when we hear about, oh, there are glasses. Grasp. No, no, sorry, there are no glasses. Oh, my God, chuck them out with the bathwater. We go too far. We have these two extreme ways of seeing. So we either cling to everything as being having an inherent eternalistic nature. Now, interestingly, philosophically speaking, Buddhism would say that Christianity and Hinduism and Islam have this view. Just talking philosophically, not being sectarian here. Okay? Have the view of real, solid, self-existent something, real, solid, self-existent out there God, real, solid, self-existent soul. Buddhism would assert that it's not possible to be this. Buddhism would argue with a Christian and say, you've got the wrong end of the stick. Yes, there's God, but Buddha, but is interdependent, everyone could become it, like I was saying before. It's just a philosophical discussion. And that the view we have of self-existent God out there and soul and absolute and permanent and inherent is a product of this fundamental ignorance that posits that, therefore doesn't see this. So these two extreme views we have, either the nihilistic one, chuck the baby out with the bathwater, or, oh, grasp, you know? And these are the instinctive ways that our mind thinks now. So what Buddha says is there's this view that ultimately there is no glasses, but the more you understand how there is glasses conventionally in its appropriate way, the more you get that it's empty. And the more you realize how there is no glasses from its own side, the more it helps you understand conventional. Okay. The shorthand for conventional reality is dependent arising. That means it's a dependent arising. It arose in dependence upon causes and conditions. Now, karma is causes and conditions for me. Right now, because of ignorance in my mind, I cling to and believe in a self-existent, real, solid, out here, schizophrenic, separate, made by somebody else, hopeless victim meanness. Which gives rise to attachment and anger and pride and jealousy and all the suffering, right? All coming from this fundamental ignorance, this fundamental misconception that is the exact opposite of the truth, that I'm a completely interdependent scenario. So because everything is empty, there can be even karma. Therefore, there is no real glasses. Therefore, there is no real Robina, self-existent, solid, poor victim, mean, nasty, horrible David. They are the creations of ignorance.
The way suffering ends is it ends through insight. And it's the insight that comprehends exactly how it is that the self actually exists. It's the insight that shows us, that tells us directly, that this self is impermanent, exists in dependence on other things, not independently and all in its own right. And so with that, having gained insight about how we ourselves exist, we can put a complete end, we can burst asunder the ignorance that was the root cause of samsara. Therefore, gaining wisdom is equivalent with gaining enlightenment. The wisdom that realizes the actual nature of how things exist is a wisdom realizing this famous principle in Buddhism, shunyata, variously translated in English, emptiness, voidness. Oh. And some people say, well, you know, seems like a despairing kind of religion, you know. Ooh, you know, pessimistic. Oh, there's nothing. Nihilistic. Oh, there's nothing. Oh, so, you know. Mm. But in fact, shunyata is the emptiness, voidness of what? Buddhists go on, you know. They go on. You have to find out of what something is empty. Well, and then there's nothing mysterious at all. There's nothing mysterious about it. I am, you are, every single thing, all selves and all things in existence are empty of an independent existence. That's all. Therefore, it's simple, you see. Therefore, things are not independent. Therefore, things are dependent and interconnected. All things are connected, you know. So the wisdom that comes to see selflessness or emptiness or voidness immediately experiences, and so we can feel these things. It's direct and unmediated knowledge. Immediately feels our connection with all things. So why would I think about harming that other person? He's me, you know. Why would I think about chopping down that tree? It's me, you know. So it's in our relationship with all other things, you know. And this is, compassion springs from this. There's no way to hold it back.
Conceptual level, I think it's really important to explore the nature of emptiness from a logical point of view. That it's impossible that we exist in our own separate islands and that we exist from our own side totally. We are dependent arisings. Everything about us is dependent on a previous moment and dependent on causes and conditions. And that's the same with everything supposedly out there. Is also not there from its own side. It's not powered from purely its own side. It has no concrete longevity to it. We're all in process. We all have a prior cause. We're all in movement, moving to a new effect, which is the cause of the next effect. There's nothing concrete about any of this. And the appearance of concreteness is ignorance. That's the thing we're fighting. Now, the essential antidote to that is to at least have a strong belief in emptiness, that things are empty of inherent existence. They're empty of that solidity. There's empty of a me-ness, of a you-ness, of an I-ness. And when you take that, as His Holiness says, you take the mantra of me, 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 I, out of the mental sphere has an incredible transformative effect. Also, you start to understand the interconnectedness of all things. Even on the simplest level, there's nothing that we see around us that we did totally ourselves. Now, being able to detach a little bit, having some experience of emptiness, even if it's imaginative, you can detach from that kind of identification with emotion and with mindsets that create a kind of static solidity to all events and situations. So clearly, as an actor, I got to be able to do that all the time, moving in and out of seemingly operatic emotional and conceptual situations, and try to maintain a sense of cleanliness about it all. That it is, in the end, just a narrative. It's just a story. And the story comes and it goes. But that space that it emerges from remains. That is solid. And that's that space of openness and clarity, of knowing. It is uncontained, has no center, has no boundaries. Yeah. So again, the more that you're able to see this kind of dreamlike, illusory nature of this narrative that kind of emerges and intoxicates us in these kind of mysterious, magical ways. If you can see that for what it is, at the same time generating a stability in this other space, which is much more expansive and certainly loving, life's problems tend to fall away.
I think it helps me get less emotional about things. Not dull or indifferent, but just less attached to my feelings towards something, because how I'm seeing it is only according to my karma. And if I like it, then I can be happy with my karma. If I don't like it, you know, I can be unhappy with my karma. But having the emptiness is like, I think, like, I mean, that's a real refuge. That's the liberating part. Knowing that what I see, if it's horrible and terrible, I'm having a bad time, it's okay. It's just what I'm experiencing right now. It's nothing to do with reality. Nothing to do with something that is there. If I really take refuge, I think it's really taking refuge in the emptiness of myself, of everyone, and of the things I see.
Can you hear me? Okay. All right.
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. I'm going to put this in my presentation board here. Give me one second.
Okay.
So, listen to this.
And my apologies to everyone about the double subtitles. I was trying to get them fixed, and I I couldn't. I was making it worse than it was. So apologies for that.
No problem. Well, again, welcome back. That was a great introduction. Again, we will unpack some of these words. For some of you that have taken these classes or have gotten involved, you may kind of click what they're saying. But for a lot of people, just the word emptiness itself is confusing. So what we'll do is we'll take some areas. Well, you may see my duplicated way of talking is that you say a word, it's like, oh my gosh, what was that all about? But then I will unpack it. So take your time, listen in, and we'll slowly and steadily, hopefully, some points will stick with you to enough for you to understand what we are talking about. Okay. But before we do go forward with the class, let's just check in and do a quick calm abiding for about a minute or so, because we don't have a lot of time, and then we'll set up our motivation. Okay. So you know, and before you do that mentally, and this is not a mandatory thing, but I will do the three bow downs in your mind. You are not bowing down to anybody. You are simply becoming humble, and you are saying, I want this. I want to learn this. And just becoming humble mentally sets the stage to open up your mind to then accept a lot of the teachings, right? So just mentally, in your wherever you're seated, just do a little bow down. In a very short, when you are bowing down, it's proper to think that you are saying, I want this knowledge. Give it to me. Okay? In many other faiths and other places, it is bowing down to somebody. A lot of people get offended by, I don't bow to anybody, but that's that big I in there, right? I don't do this for anybody, right? So that kind of stuff. So this is a basically humbling yourself to say, I'm opening up my mind. Please come in. Okay, so that's one way to look at it. So let's get our back straight. If you're seated on a chair, put your feet down. Okay, and then your arms are loosely on your lap. Hands about 2 or 3 inches below your navel. Right hand over your left. And the thumbs are touching in a form of a teardrop like this. Basically just taking a nice straight position. It's called the meditative position. Some people in Buddhism call it the Virochana form, perfect form. Some people do full lotus, some do half lotus, and many of us can sit, we have to sit in a chair. So it doesn't matter, just as far as your back is straight. It's not leaning back and it's not too forward, just like a stack of coins, nice and straight. Okay? Your head is slightly tilted, inclined slightly forward. You may gaze on the floor or in front of you. And your jaw and mouth are relaxed, teeth slightly apart, lips slightly touching. And remember, these positions were made for many reasons. Your energies that flow through the body. If you're going to sit for a long time, you don't want to sweat under your arm. You don't want to lock your jaw. You want to be in a comfortable position. So a lot of these techniques or sitting positions were developed. Your tongue is resting lightly on the upper palate, the tip touching the back of your upper teeth. And your eyes are either shut or slightly open. It's preferred to have a slightly open because you don't want to fall asleep. And slightly open to be aware. But your mind, you're looking within yourself. Okay, your mind. And what we're going to do is just scan your body and see anything is tight. Just get comfortable. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a breathing meditation. This is called a calm abiding meditation. This develops concentration. Okay? And it reminds you of focusing onto something. Breath is neutral. It's easy to focus on a glass or a deity or a book or something, but this is purely breathing, which is absolutely natural and neutral. And what you want to do is put your focus onto your breath, either at the nose where the breath is coming in and out. For some people, they like the abdomen. When you inhale, the abdomen goes out and then in. And all you're trying to do is as you breathe in and breathe out, just focus on your breath. Okay? That's all you have to do. Now, what happens is you will see that your mind wants to wander. It's late in the evening. Some people may be hungry. Some of you ate. Somebody wants to go to sleep. All of these things come in your mind. What you want to do is say, okay, I see you. I think this way, but oh, my job is to come back and focus on the breath. So you're consistently bringing back and letting your mind know that you need to come back and focus on the breath. Let's just do that for about a minute, okay? And observe that mind that wants to wander. Think of it just like the clouds in the sky. They come, but then they go away, and then you see the bright sky. Same way, you just keep on focusing on your breath, and if you want to slowly go away from it because your mind wants to wander off, just to come back. I was supposed to be concentrating on my breath. Okay, with a slightly comfortable, calmer mind, let's set our motivation. Okay, and remember, everything we do has a motivation in it. If you want to get up and go, you have to get up and open the door. So you have to have a motivation and an intent to really do something. So in this case, let's set the intention for a moment, collect your thoughts. And think this is an opportunity to transform our minds by listening to the most profound subject that Buddha taught. It means by which a person can achieve liberation and supreme enlightenment. Regardless of how profound the subject matter is, how blessed the setting is, how capable or incapable the teacher is, whether or not we actually advance ourselves on the path to liberation and enlightenment, it all depends principally on the motivation behind the action. So listening is the initial step of our spiritual development. No matter what form it takes, listening, reading, discussion, watching His Holiness's DVD, all of those things. And so as we embark on this voyage into the nature of reality, we need many different skills. We need to be selective in our reading and listening, sifting out of authentic texts. So the books you read, there are plenty of things around, but try and follow a lineage teaching so it is maintained from the Buddha down to you, through the teachers. So you will have to be a little discriminative on what you read. To be perseverant, to get the actual meaning, we have to study them, listen to the teachings from a qualified teachers again and again. Listening without assimilating what we are listening is useless. So think about that for a second. You know, it's in the ear and out of the ear. So you want to really assimilate it, concentrate on it. So the second step is contemplation. So think about that. You know, when you see something, a movie or anything, it makes most impression is when you really think again. After you are done, you think about it. It settles in. Oh, that was great. So you need to contemplate. So not only study, listen, but contemplate. Contemplating means absorbing more deeply whatever we have heard into our hearts. For instance, hearing that ignorance is the root of samsara will not get us closer to the freedom from suffering. unless we apply that knowledge and understand what it means. The key is to know that contemplation means to investigate what we have heard, to come to know as much as we can about it and to understand it deeply. And then we meditate. Only then we are ready to start to meditate on it, which is the third of the three steps of understanding. So therefore, bring your attention to your ultimate objective, which is to achieve supreme enlightenment and to benefit each and every living being. We have found this unique opportunity, met with the teachings of Buddha, the perfect and complete path, and we want to take advantage of it so that we can become a perfect cause for the happiness of all living beings. This is hard to resist. So try to generate that state of mind and engage in this effort to achieve that supreme state. Imagine that all living beings throughout this universe are in anticipation of this moment. And by the effort that we generate now, they are going to get closer to their liberation. Thank you. You can bring your attention back to the class. Okay, some logistics. So today's class, I can tell you, is a short class. We are already quarter to 10 to 8. 8:30, we want to end it. So we may not cover a lot, but I think setting the stage, getting a little background where these teachings are coming from, if we can get to that part and do an ending meditation, I think we'll set the stage for the next class, which will be a full class, right? We'll go through all the topics that we need to cover. I do want to tell you, first of all, that this is the 12th module, as Linda stated when we started the class. And so it doesn't matter which module you start, but there are mind and its potential and how to meditate and presenting the path of Lamrim, the spiritual teacher. I have a list here, all about karma, refuge in the three jewels, establishing the daily practice, samsara, nirvana, how to develop bodhicitta, transforming problems, and then wisdom of emptiness. And only after that is tantra, and the last module is integration practices. So you are at that. So some of the words may go this way, but we will slow down and we'll make sure I can explain some of those things. Okay. And there's also a reading material. Everybody, once you go into that link, you will get all your reading materials. It is very important that at least if not reading the entire books, you at least read the reading material, and we'll go through that a little bit. And there are two or three books, but the one I would suggest is the smallest and a very, very beautiful book. It's free. I think you can find this on Lama Yeshe Archive. It's one of your reading requirements called Virtue and Reality. They've listed a bunch of books, right? They've listed How to See Yourself by Holiness. This is in the bookstore sometimes. And I've used these three books myself because I've read all these books. So every time I have to present a class, I have to go through my own reading to look at different angles. And I love these books by Geshe Thashi Sering, Relative Truth, Ultimate Truth, and Emptiness. It gives you different angles and some vocabulary that's easy to present and understand. So I have relied on this book a lot. There's a bunch of books that Tashi Sharing writes. And of course, this Introduction to Emptiness was my initial book that I read by Guy Newland. So I'll just tell you a little bit about these books, what they talk about, and then we'll move forward. So you're going to hear these words again and again and again, as you heard on the video. So according to Guy Newland, the book titled Introduction to Emptiness, he says, we falsely believe that we exist in a solid, independent way. You heard that. Venerable Robina talked about it, and Karen Valhan talked about it. So we sometimes feel that we are solid. I am Hema. There's nobody else. I'm Hema. That's Linda. That's Dinesh, right? We go through this thinking everything is this solid, independent thing. So first of all, that's how we think. Okay? So we falsely believe. So now we will unpack it later on in the classes. Why is it false? So you got to think a little bit slow and think about it. Why do they say that this is false? So we'll talk about that, right? Then he says, let's think about it. Death tells us differently. that we are impermanent. We all understand that you're not the same person you were 5 years old. You're not the same person when you're 17 years old, right? And you're going to age, and you're going to get to older age, hopefully, and we die. That tells you things are impermanent. These walls, this building, this house, your background, your curtains, your clothes, everything is disintegrating at this moment. You're aging the second minute, you're aging already. So we know we are impermanent, right? We were born, we are going to go. If you know somebody that's permanently here, let me know. I'd love to visit that person. Okay? So we know our bodies are disintegrating moment by moment, right? So birth, infancy, childhood, teen, adult, old age, death. Look at anything, the trees and roads and everything needs repairs and yes, because things are impermanent. Beneath all this ever-changing minds and aging body, there is no eternal or all self, or no eternal, like they're not concrete. That's why they're impermanent. If they were concrete, they would be static. Things would not change. Because it can change, because things are impermanent, we can learn, we can practice, we can change our mind. So for just a little bit, we'll go, of course, get into this many times. So let that settle in a little bit. So we exist, but only in dependence on our body parts, such as body parts. Then we need water, we need food, other members of the society, our ancestors, and many, many others. Otherwise, we do not exist. We'll also look at that. And you'll have to see it with two different visuals. You see yourself right now as your name and who you are and the label that you have on it. But then you see how you, when you eat something, when an apple comes to you, when you go anywhere, how many things are working from different angles for that to happen? We'll talk about that. So our existence is possible only because it is less, far less rigid, less concrete than that we imagine to be. So that's what this book, Introduction to Emptiness, talks about, okay? And then it gets into this relative truth and ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is the sheer absence or lack of such existence. Okay? And we'll unpack all of that. This is what they call emptiness. That word itself is confusing because we are so used to seeing the glass is empty. The cup of coffee is gone. It's empty. Right? So we see empty as not there. So you can take just the not there a little bit in a finer way and say, maybe what we think exists 100%, maybe it's not that way. Let's just let that settle in for right now. Just take a small step. It does not mean lack or meaning of existence, meaning we have no hope, everything is absent. It is the exaggerated, distorted kind of existence that we have projected. Okay? And we'll, again, as I keep on saying it, as we go through the class, some of these things will start to fall in place because of the repetitious. There's some examples. So what happens to people is as soon as they hear that, then they think this is disappointing, this is bleak. You know, what's the point? So I turned that around. It may even have a negative connotation for other. And how can this be a spiritual path? So now think about it the other way around. If we actually did have a solid kind of existence, then there would be no change. We already talked about that. We would be locked into existence just as we are now. Everything would be in a state of frozen, static and frozen. We could not interact, grow, learn, and become wiser. Then how could we find happiness? Think about that. We are not static. We are impermanent and changing all the time. But because we know we are impermanent and changing, we know that suffering is not a fixed part of reality. It can be changed. And in fact, it will change. So whether it gets worse or better depends on the causes and conditions, which means that it really depends on us. So we'll talk it out. This is where people say, wait, but I don't exist, and what is on us? Don't worry. right now, just listen to the words. These are what the books are saying. Our geisha always says, we can change our minds, period. And that it allows us to change the course. All right? In a way, the empty nature means there is no limit to what we can become. We are not blocked, obstructed, or tied down. And we all have Buddha potential. And we'll talk about that. You may already know from previous classes, if not, that your mind is aware. Its job is to be aware and to know. It is not physical. It wants to know. The reason we don't see, we only see limited because of what we've imputed on it and the karmic seeds, and that's how we see the world. We create our own reality based on all the words and the labels and the pictures we've created in our mind. Right? But if you remove that as we do this and you understand the subject matter of emptiness, it will release you to recognize your Buddha potential and become enlightened. Or at least liberated, let me tell you. Okay, you will start to see that I get involved with this stuff for no reason. Okay? So that's why there's a lot of possibilities in understanding emptiness. So the relative truth and ultimate truth by Tashi Tsering, he just talks about the two truths, that conventionally we exist, like we are here, I am Hemant, I am talking to you right now, right? But there's an ultimate, you have to also know that something is doing that, but there is underneath all that, there's an ultimate nature that sees things differently. So we will talk about that a little bit, okay? So we can bring richness to our lives, okay? So don't feel that there is, our lives have their share of joy, fulfillment, pain, challenges, all this is real. And we experience it and see it operate within our lives, everyone we encounter, friends, families, we see it. But to really be effective, we need to understand that what is happening at a deeper level, beyond these conventional dependencies that rule our hearts, at this level, there's a fundamental mode of existence that all things and events share. Everything becomes one. At this level, there is no diversity, no differences. Okay? And this is what this subject is about. We're going to learn that. How does that happen? What does that mean? Because it's easy to say we are not concrete and everything is dependent and that's emptiness. Well, then there's no class. But what we need to do is slowly take you through the stages, and there will be some modes where it's like, oh, I didn't get that. But hopefully it will get so more and more you study this, do your readings, and come to the class, we will unpack some of this confusion. Okay. Any questions about these books? And the last book is a much, much heavier dose, but it's starts very good. It talks about details of Buddha's teachings on the subject matter, that it comes from Buddha. His essential teaching is on the compassion and ethics combined with the wisdom that understands the nature of reality. And the teaching contains everything needed to eliminate the suffering. And it goes into real detail about how you develop and understand selflessness and concept of selfhood and the differences between the different schools that were teaching this, and ultimately establishing and meditating on emptiness. That's what the third book is about. So I just wanted to let you know some of the topics have come from that. My points are coming from some of these books. This particular program is developed by FPMT, and they had met in Italy, and Thupten Pende is the one who wrote the syllabus for this. So I want to give him credit for this training module. I also want to give big, big credits to all the Dinesh teacher, but immediately Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is the head of FPMT, and our Geshe-la, and all the teachers in Kadampa Center. I have learned from them. And so I'm able to now assimilate some of this knowledge and able to share it with you. So I want to definitely give credit to so many causes and conditions. Linda is a cause and condition for me to even present this today. For example, if you were not there, there would be no causes and conditions for me to teach or speak. So there's so many things that come into play for something to happen. Okay, so just know that. And we are following the steps of the greatest masters all the way from Buddha, and you will get familiar with the name Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, Santideva, Pava Viveka, Ayadeva, and all of those things. I don't want to create a lot of jargon, but those, some of these things, this subject matter is such, it becomes technical in nature sometimes. So you have to kind of get to know it. Okay? So far, so good. All right. So these presentations are based on Lama Tsongkhapa's and his disciples, the treatise composed by the great masters, which I just mentioned, and also credit to the Westerners that had to learn. They have Tibetan, and Tibetan, they compiled all these things from Sanskrit and Pali texts. So there were so many people who got involved, learned the language, and made it easy for us to understand. Just think of months it would take for you to right now learn Tibetan or Sanskrit, for example, and then decipher this complex topic. So think about causes and conditions for this to be here in English, that we can talk about it in an hour and a half for at least one class. So we should thank them. So I also want to mention places I go to. Lama Yeshe Archives. I say this every class, and you should really have that as, if you're a serious student, you should have that as your favorite. And I think I can tell you, I go to the glossary, and if I go to my, I'll show you very quickly. It is https://www.lamayeshe.org/ www.lamayeshe.com/glossary/n, n as in November. But you'll find it. And I always have it, and a lot of my definitions and stuff, I go there first. There are a lot of articles, reading materials, and he was our Lama Sopa Rinpoche's teacher. So authentic teachings, okay? The course reading requirements, I think I've organized it in the way I would like you to read. The first two are very small, just two or three pages. I don't think so they're long. The two truths, the relative truth, or conventional truth, and ultimate truth. That's much better than I can do right now in 5-10 minutes, but you should read that. Non-duality. It is to stay in the center. What that really means is the mind, when you go through this topic, thinks that nothing is there. That's called nihilistic. That's not good. Something is there and you're saying it's not there. Or the other side of the coin, where we think everything is solid the way it is. So you need to have this view, proper view, so it will talk about non-duality. Then it takes you to a little advanced thinking. So when we talk about emptiness, we're still talking about the examples. I look at the trees and look at the building and all that. But truly comes to us. We think we exist concretely. There is something in me that is, says I am me. So we will be looking at Seeking the I by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, very nicely explained. Okay? And then we'll later on in class 2 or 3, I would expect that you start. And the Seeking the I is a couple of pages, so you don't need to finish the whole thing, but at least get to the first 3. And I think, seriously, if you want to understand this course, it will help you. Okay. I already mentioned the virtual reality and the liberation in palm of your hand. For those that have the blue book, if you not, you can get an, I think, PDF version if you want to. This is the go-to book, right? This takes all the Lam Rim teachings, the stages of the path to enlightenment, and Paponka Rinpoche has really put this into a perfect book, and you need to become familiar with it. If you haven't seen it, it looks like this. I think most of you know it. And then these other two are optional for you. I like His Holiness's book, How to See Yourself as You Really Are, because he puts it in a little easier language. He doesn't get too technical. In Heart Sutra, we'll talk about Heart Sutra. So let's learn some definitions, because these words will be used again. Okay, so you heard today, dependent origination. What does that dependent origination mean? Also called dependent arising. The way that the self and the all phenomena exist conventionally as relative and interdependent. One small example, just a small example. Let's look at a tree. Okay, it comes from a seed. The seed would not have become a tree if the causes and conditions of sunlight and the water was not there. The same seed put on the north side of my house would not grow as much as it would grow on the south side. Okay, now think about the water. It has causes and conditions for it to rain or somebody to give water. But water comes from somewhere else. The sunlight, the rays, the trees in between, there's so many things. And then the seed comes from a fruit or a pod. The pod comes from another fruit or, another tree, okay? And it goes on and on and on. And then when it, suppose it's an apple, okay, somebody has to take it down. Somebody puts it in a silo, deoxygenates it. It gets onto a truck. It comes to the store. Somebody unpacks it, puts it in a pallet, all the way down to you spending the money that you got because of causes and conditions. And then you finally bring it in the home, and you eat the apple, correct? So you see how causes and conditions, how dependent origination everything is. Look at your home, look at yourself. Where did you come from? From your parents. Where did the parents come from? Goes on and on. It can go on. So gives you an idea of what dependent origination means. That means you are not just plopped in permanently. Everything is dependent on causes and conditions. And then we label it. Then I'm causes and condition, and these parts come together, and I call it Hemant. And now Hemant sees Hemant concretely. We'll talk about that a little bit, okay? So that's what it's talking about. And our mind then imputes that I am solid. Look at me, right? That's what happens to us. Now, if everybody is that way, then we are all connected, interconnected. Shunyata is another word you will hear. It's a Sanskrit word, and it also means emptiness. It's the absence or lack of true existence. Ultimately, every phenomena is empty of existing truly from their own side or independently, which is pretty synonymous with dependent origination, interdependent. So beginning to put some ease in your mind. I just want you to become familiar with this word, the aggregates. Some of you know it from my previous classes or other classes, or have read it. But what is an aggregate? These are the constituents that make us sentient being. We have a form, a material image or impression of this form, body. We have feelings, sensations, received from the form. Then our mind imputes on that and discriminates. I like it and I don't like it, and that's tall and that's short and that's big and that's fat, right? We do that. And then we have all these mental volitions or karmic compositional factors going on. If I do this and if I don't like them, this must be that. We make all these things up in our head, believe me, no facts in it. It's simply your imputations, your thoughts, and finally consciousness or mind. This is what makes us the sentient being. As you will find out later on, that because of that solid feeling, we have ignorance. And simply in English, ignorance means not seeing that which exists. If you did not know what a pen looks like, you're ignorant of pen. But if you don't know how reality exists, you're ignorant of that. And our job is to develop the wisdom to learn that reality, to become non-ignorant. Okay. And then understand the word merely labor. Think about it for a second. Merely labor. The subtlest meaning of dependent arising. Every phenomena exists relatively. We've already said how things by moment is changing. So only very subtly, we give it a name, we label it. And we call it something. That's called merely labeled. It's simply made up in our mind. If when I was born, I was not Hemant. Till my mom started calling me 20 times Hemant, then I started listening. There was no Hemant. It's simply a name. But then I have a whole bunch of package that goes behind Hemant, who Hemant is and what he looks like and what he does and all this, right? So you can think about that for a second, okay? Right now, just knowledge. And then you hear this word prajna, which is a Sanskrit word, means wisdom also. Just in case, I only say this because when you're reading and they'll say prajna paramita, and you will say like, what was that? So your continuity kind of stops because you see a little heavy word. So nothing. Prajna means wisdom and paramita means perfection. And all of these teachings or discourses are called sutras. And so when you see prajna paramita, these are wisdom sutras or discourses, Buddha's teachings of wisdom, okay? So that's why it's important to know that word. We have 15 minutes left. What I will do is, let's see if I can, maybe we'll just cover this next time. We'll talk introduction to what Heart Sutra is in short. I can tell you what it is, and then we'll go to meditation. So we can keep the time. I want to make sure that 8:30 we stop. Okay? So Buddha taught perfection of wisdom, and they say in 100,000 verses. Then there were 25,000 verses. Then there were 8,000 verses. And then if you condense that, the Wisdom Sutra, the Heart Sutra, so the shortest form of Heart Sutra, this is the Wisdom Sutra. Okay? So it tells you it's a condensed into a very short form. The shortest mantra recited of prajna paramita. Prajna, the meaning and definition was wisdom. Paramita is perfection. Wisdom perfection sutras or teachings. Discourses. See, that's how the words come in. Literally perfection of wisdom. And this teaching Sakyamuni Buddha gave. And then if you condense even, so the word mantra, when you look at Heart Sutra, you can see it as a word, mantra. Word mantra means it comes from the word manas, meaning mind, and tra, meaning to protect. It protects your mind. And then if you really even narrow it down, it goes down to just a simple couple of words in this mantra, tayata, gate gate, paragate, parasamagate, bodhisoha. And that means, let's see, this is too ahead. I will go into it further. Tayata means like that. It's been said. Gone. Gate means gone. Gate gate means gone, gone. Paragate means beyond gone. Parasamagate means gone further to the other shore. Bodhi, meaning awakening. So be it. Soha. As you progress through these teachings, and as you get these obscurations out and you started to meditate, then start to get the glimpses of emptiness, you will ultimately, your goal is to be gone, gone beyond this mundane samsara, beyond gone, and become enlightened, liberated and enlightened. So be it. That's how powerful that mantra is. It teaches you, once you read the, we'll actually go through the Heart Sutra, and once you see the understanding of it, you will see how it starts to fall in place and how Buddha taught. So we'll go through that. So with that said, I'm going to actually move forward to my notes here and see if there's anything else I want to say something to you. So I ask that you start the readings. Go to the link, download it. You sincerely try and attempt to read those non-duality, seeking the I, the ones that I talked about. it will really help you and augment these sessions. Because a lot of times we'll jump over some things and it will be like, what was all that about? But this will kind of coincide and work together, okay? So just from what we, and then we'll go, we'll, next class we'll cover some of these topics that I have, I'm leaving out today. It is important to know the background. It is important to know a little historical background. Who said this? Where does it come from? How do I know this is accurate? That kind of thinking. Once you have established that in your mind and you have some conviction that this is something I really want to learn, now you're motivated. Okay? So with that, let's close this with a little concentration preparation. This is very similar to the breathing meditation we did, but a little more verbiage to it so you can understand, okay? So just again, sit back in your meditation position with your back straight, hands right hand over your left hand, thumbs touching, face leaning forward, relaxed, arms and roof open, your jaw is not tight, making sure your tongue is up in the palate, mouth slightly open, eyes also slightly open. Nothing is tight, nothing, it's just relaxed. So check your postures. So recognize that the time we give to meditation is extremely small. And give yourself permission to let go of the past and future. And remain completely present for this sensation, this session of meditation. What we'll do is count 7 or 21 cycles of natural breath while paying special attention to the sensation of the breath coming in and out of your nostrils. So set your motivation for this meditation session by recognizing the innate wish for happiness that is shared by yourself and others. Acknowledge your deep longing to not only stop the suffering of yourself and attain personal peace, but also your sincere wish to stop the suffering of others. Then with the mind taking responsibility to actually do this, generate the mind of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the mind that wants to benefit universally all sentient beings. That is the wish to attain perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all. Therefore, I am going to do this meditation. During this meditation, we will cultivate concentration. And why? We need a very good concentration to cultivate knowledge of emptiness, especially the direct experience of it. And you may have noticed that from time to time during this session, you had fleeting glimpses of what we were discussing about. Or when you saw the video, you got a little snippets of emptiness or certain words that may have created some visual or thoughts. We need to hold such understanding to expand and expand it. It is fleeting. If it is just fleeting, it will have little impact on us. It may not even be sufficient to make us doubt that there is something wrong with our ordinary experience. So the objects, like the appearance of the object that we negate, or we say it's not the way you see it is, are difficult to grasp initially, let alone the objects for us to practice cultivating concentration. So let us start with something easy like a breath, right? And watch your breathing without distraction. And just take notice of such movement as your belly rising and falling, or the sensation of air passing through your nasal passages. You do not need to think a lot about breath. Do not conceptualize it, about the oxygen in the air and passing through your tissue or lungs into the blood, etc. Just let it naturally flow. Just take note of the fact that you are breathing and do not let your mind stray from that. Now be as attentive as you are capable of, like when you must carry a full mug of coffee across the living room without spilling it, spilling a drop. Maintain this level of attentiveness without loosening your hold on it. If and when you forget what you're doing, immediately upon realizing this, bring your attention back to watching the breath. This exercise is the power of memory. You must recall what you are supposed to be doing during this meditation session. And your first goal is to minimize the time you have forgotten what you were supposed to do. Your power of memory will improve as you use it. So eventually you will be able to sustain mindfulness of breath for the entire session. So your next goal is to notice when you are about to wander from watching the breath before you actually do so. So exercise vigilance by checking from time to time if your mind is getting agitated and inclined towards leaving the task of watching the breath. And immediately upon spotting this, you must counter this inclination with discipline. One way to do so is by recalling that although breathing is not very interesting, the concentration that you're developing will enable you to develop your knowledge and experience of emptiness. If you don't do this, you will wander forever in a vicious cycle of existence. So similar to this goal is the goal of being able to notice when you are about to weaken your grip on the attentiveness to watching the breath. Unlike wandering from the object, this weakens your attention and may not involve losing the object of meditation, just weakens it. It may feel like starting to absorb deeply into your mind resulting in diminishment in mental sharpness, alertness, and strength of attention. So immediately upon spotting this, you must counter it, brighten your disposition, recall the advantages of developing concentration and wisdom of realizing emptiness. And be vigilant. So at this stage, you just need to accustom yourself with the object of meditation, in this case, watching breath. So let's dedicate your efforts that you may soon realize your optimum potential and become a perfect guide to lead others to actualize this potential as well. And dedicate your efforts to become a perfect cause for happiness for all living beings. Okay. You can bring your attention back to the class. So next class, we'll get deeper into the history. I will cover the history quickly. Where the teachings come from, quickly about the different traditions and schools, slightly differing from each other, but ultimately who we are following, why we are following, and where do these teachings come from. Okay? We will talk a little bit briefly about what Buddha realized under the Bodhi tree when he was enlightened, how he saw how things were connected, and why he cycled through samsara again and again and again. and how we can get out of it. A little brief introduction to that. And once we get through that, then we'll actually get into our class. And I will not review like I normally do. I go through quite a bit of it. I will keep a short summary just so we can catch up, or people who missed, they at least get that that's what we talked about. So please contemplate on some of the topics we talked about or the video you saw. If you can go to Lama Yeshe's archives or read those reading materials, that will keep it alive in your mind a little bit. Okay? So we'll go through some definitions again. We'll talk about what they call 12 links. We'll recite the Heart Sutra, give you a little bit of insight about what it's talking about. When Buddha condensed all that into a Heart Sutra, it is specifically to the wisdom of emptiness. We'll talk about how ignorance creates this misknowledge of reality. And then we'll talk more about these words. You hear emptiness, voidness, selflessness, sunyata. And now think about Chinese, Vietnamese, Tibetan, Sanskrit, all these different meanings. And you see this, ultimately, we'll discuss that you can apply to for right now, we can see other things as void of something. But for us, our eye, we can call it selfless. So we'll talk about that. Why? And this personal identity that we created. And then we'll end with the transition of awareness of death. Why that is important, we'll talk about that a little bit. But we do all of these things till we get to that point when fear is we're clinging on to fear and not knowing. And that why that it's important to liberate your mind earlier and have this root of ignorance cut from the bottom, and that is through learning emptiness. So we'll talk about it. Okay, so with that, it is exactly 8:30 or 8:29. Let me know if something comes up. You can reach me. I think my email was in the front slide, Hemant_Pandya@msn.com. Or you can text me. I think my number is, just so you know, it's 919-602-1040. If you have a real urgent question that you need to know before you can even read something, text me. But my goal is to simplify as much as possible, but certain things I must mention because that's how it starts. So just have patience with me, and hopefully we'll get to some point of understanding emptiness, okay? So thank you.